Welcome to the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast, where we explore what it truly means to lead with love. In a world that's moving faster than ever, this is your space to slow down, reconnect with your purpose, and hear about the kind of leadership that transforms lives and how it can do the same for yours too. Your hosts are me, Daryl Brown, Sarah Feely, and CLC founder, Laurel Donnellan. If you're ready to grow, question, and to lead with courage and compassion, you're in the right place.
I am so excited today to have two women I met at South by Southwest EDU in the coffee line. I have Penelope Barton, the CEO, and Brittany Bates, the senior VP of an amazing organization called Crimson Global Academy. I'm very excited to talk to them. I have a huge passion for education and education equality. In our company, we've been working on K through 12 leadership programs for 20 years. I'm an aunt to a lot of kids that have gone through public schools and are now trying online schools. And I'd like to frame today's conversation around creativity, because as I look at Crimson Global Academy, I feel like they're a great example of one of the principles that we talk about a lot, which is creativity and playing with possibilities, whether you do that as an individual or as an organization or as a culture. They're going to share more about this, but education is changing rapidly, and I imagine creativity and listening to their parents and their students is really important to them. So welcome to the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So my first question is, we never got to talk about this because we were like ships passing in the night, but I'd love to hear from each of you why you attended the South by Southwest Education Conference. And a few weeks later, what did you bring home from that?
South by Southwest, I was invited to speak on what we're doing in terms of global education and then AI in education. For me, it was, you know, sort of on my bucket list of conferences to come and present at and meet people. And for me, it was that intersection of technology and AI and such a broad range of schools, creatives. I met film producers and everyone sort of bringing this multidisciplinary space into education as opposed to, you know, just a pure education or a pure digital learning or anything like that. It was this lovely kind of cross-section of people. And so I think the ideas, questions, listening to what people were asking and the perspective they were bringing was incredibly valuable. In terms of what's stuck with me, however many weeks later, there was this whole conversation on AI versus human-made and seeing and talking to a lot of people who are very anti-AI, and I probably sit at the other end of the spectrum, but amazing to hear their perspective. And then I've been seeing this kind of come up more and more over the last few weeks as kind of human-made, how people are stamping it, how they're positioning it. It's been a lot of education companies recently in those, you know, few weeks since have really come out to say led by humans, taught by humans. And so that's been kind of interesting to see the shift in how people are trying to navigate during this time. So that's been something we've been having more conversations on internally in terms of one, how it's positioned, but two, the sort of, you know, varying perspectives on that.
Brittany, how about you?
So South by Southwest EDU is one of those conferences where, as an educator who prides themselves on tech and innovation, you just can't wait to go. And so when Penny shared she was presenting, I very quickly said, so I can come too, right? because I could not wait. One, I love opportunities to watch Penny present and work more closely together. But two, the ability to watch presentations, meet with other educators, hear what's going on across our nation for all of us that are in that intersection of innovation, technology, and education. It ignites your creativity, your curiosity, hard-hitting conversations, but also forces you to take your own paradigm and start to move it around a little bit and look at it from other angles. So I was fortunate enough to sit in on everything from what's happening in public sector education and how are public schools getting creative and how can I help augment and work with them, to what are some of those ed tech companies that we love and hold dear doing, and how are they doing it, and what are they thinking about as they do it, so that we can continue to drive those conversations forward. Something I really brought home, and I had thought I had said it a lot before the conference, but I'm realizing I didn't. It was more an internal thought, is really talking to our educators about how AI is empowering them to bring that human element to education more and more. And again, we're saying it a lot and it's being written down on pieces of paper, but really ensuring that that continues, that work continues to move forward. Our teachers all know that they're at the center of what we do and that we take their feedback seriously, but also just bringing back that piece of we're not replacing you, and just keeping that human teacher moment at the center of what we do.
I went to the innovation conference after the education conference, so I had a lot more AI conversations after you all left. And I probably arrived more on the human side and left much more on the AI side. And since then, have been hiring people to help me with AI and have do, do you know really have embraced. I mean, I think I also left everything with, I think we need guardrails on AI that are imposed by the government, and that's going to be a long game, but short game is it's here and it's very, very valuable, and students and parents and teachers are going to use it, so we need to know about it. But let's come back to your amazing organization. I'm really curious about how it began and what you're up to now. So tell me about, do you call it CGA for short?
We do.
Yeah, it's quite a mouthful otherwise to say Crimson Global Academy in every sentence. So CGA for short. To answer your question on how we started and why we started, so we were born out of Crimson Education as our parent company, and in that organization, working with students who are all around the world looking at how they gain admission into the world's top universities. And what we saw again and again is just students that would get to that sort of end part of their journey, and based off their postcode, based off where they were from, dictated what was available to them in terms of their high school, and then the sort of compounding effects that has in terms of what's then available to them on the university side. I mean, students who might be rurally based that outside of boarding school didn't have, specialist teachers nearby. So they didn't get to do, let's say, they didn't get to do physics, or they didn't get to do some of the science subjects, or even on the English side, that was a combined teacher that was trying to do it all. And so we just saw this compounding later on in terms of subject choices, options that were available, specialist teachers, and we went, how might we create a world in which student outcomes and geography are uncorrelated? And so we started originally with the last 2 years of high school and some part-time APs as sort of a supplement for those students. And then very quickly, we've been running for 6 years now, very quickly moved from what was a 20 student cohort to will be 3,000 students for this upcoming September intake, and students from 72 countries around the world, all joining live synchronous classes, and now the majority of our students full time with us.
In those 6 years, a lot has changed in the world. Like we had COVID, we had.
On the school side, that sort of 20 through to 3,000, that has come with a lot of reshaping what we do to best serve the students. So when we look at how we design education, we sort of went from that first principles, what if students had flexibility on what they studied, where they studied, how they studied, when they studied. And so that kind of evolved into, okay, we should have multi-curriculum. So we have the US and the British curriculum. They should have group classes and one-to-one and asynchronous, and that's how they study. They should be able to do that and mix and match between learning modes. They should have the flexibility to join us part-time or full-time. And then they should also have that flexibility in terms of time of day that they study. They may want to start their classes at midday and have an and kind of bunch them together. They may want to split the day. They may want to run it across 7 days and fewer each day, and it's really up to the student. And so what we've done over that time is just continue to build that flexibility with our students and sort of structurally how they can engage in schooling and design education for them. And then Brittany, over to you on the in the classroom experience.
Absolutely. I love this question, which is what I was about to say, because as we look at it as a school and all the shifts, the classroom has also been a place where that, student-centered, a lot of us like to talk about it, but CJ has really put it into practice where we're looking at what do our students need, what's coming into our classroom, how do we need to shift? And even if we just take US Diploma pathway and look at that for a moment, we started it as project-based learning, and that was, this was the model we were pushing toward and going after. And as we worked with our educators and our students, and things shifted and moved, and we added our new learning modes and our flexibility, we started doing this project integrated design, which is our way of saying the best teaching strategies for the subjects and students in your room. So our teachers are taught and trained in these responsive teaching approaches to where there might be a day or a class where that teacher relies heavily on flipped classroom model, or that teacher is doing Socratic method, or a teacher is heavy in project-based learning, or our teachers are taking all of those practices plus direct instruction to balance the needs of their classroom. So our teachers can be responsive to the students because, as we all know, one model doesn't fit one school necessarily. It definitely doesn't fit one student to help capitalize on that. And then those approaches are also, being shared across now curriculum pathways of we can take these online learning walls and stretch them and move them to ensure that our students are getting exactly what they need. And that's just been a really interesting any evolution that we've gone through to ensure that our teachers are not only trained in these core instructional models, but also then we look at best practices in 2E instruction and how, again, how are we bringing what our students need into that room?
So based on what you just said, it sounds like the teachers have a lot of latitude to be creative and to be responsive. And they must, I mean, I imagine teachers don't have that everywhere. That's
Not in my teaching experience. I mean, right, there are districts there. I mean, and I would never venture to guess to or venture to speak for all districts, but there are districts where they say, we've purchased this, you will teach it with fidelity, and this is what we're doing. Our teachers are, we need to be aligned to our learning objectives and outcomes, right? We need to ensure that we're giving our students the things that we say we are, but they do have, they have a lot of resource wrapped around them as well to help ensure that our students have continuity of education, but still those teachers can be responsive in those times than they need to be.
a lot of our listeners won't be really familiar with online learning, so I'd love for you to talk about how you're different from most high school online learning environments. I mean, I'm fascinated with this 70 countries, and I've seen little video clips of your students that have friends all over the world. I mean, there's a part of me that it made me cry because I think if students were going to high school with people around the world, we wouldn't have wars. Like they really have true friendships with each other. So thank you for that. But tell us more about how this actually works.
For me, I've been on a mission to get rid of the head tilt that comes with, oh, you're an online school. So, what I like to tell families when I meet with them is please let go of what you think online school looks like. I am not calling any one model good or bad. I'm just saying let go of what you think of online school looks like, and I'll tell you about CGA. CGA is a place that took what we love about in-person education, took what we love about online education, took what we love about education in general, and said, well, why can't we do it this way? And so our school, as Penny had outlined earlier, has a lot of different learning modes. Our students can have a set timetable where they show up, they log on, they're in a class of 15, their teacher holds class sessions, assigns self-study and homework. Those teachers also hold office hours and one-to-one sessions and that sort of thing. Our school also has a DaVinci one-to-one learning mode where our students can book in with a teacher one-to-one and learn a subject. Maybe that's because they want to accelerate that subject. Maybe it's because they want to go slower in that subject. Maybe it's because they've had exposure and they go, I probably already know units 1 through 3. Like, can we just make sure I know what I think I know and start at unit 4? And then we also have our I like to call it our asynchronous with guardrails. So it's our flexible learning mode where our students can watch recorded lessons and submit work. The guardrails come into where they have to make adequate progress throughout the term. They have to show they're engaging with material and they're still held to a school calendar to complete. And that just helps, in my experience, with some motivation to ensure that our students don't get distracted. When school's online on the computer, it's a little easier to close that screen, especially if you don't have that live lecture or that face-to-face meeting, and be like, oh, I'm going to do that later. So that's why we've wrapped some guardrails around it. And that's just based on some experiences that I've had. In addition to all of that, CGA builds community online. So our students have homeroom. They have assembly, they're assigned houses, and they get to have not only school pride, but house pride, and they get to connect with peers in similar grade and age levels. We also have clubs, and these clubs are held cross campus, which means they're held cross time zones. So, a student could be having a class with a student in New Zealand and Japan and the US all at the same time, or a club. And that just helps bring in that perspective piece and that community piece to ensure that our students are engaging across many different facets, not just in the classroom, but they get to walk through our virtual hallways and communicate on CGA platforms that way. They get to come to CGA assemblies, CGA events. We host, fireside chats and things like that as well to just ensure that they have that time together.
How we're different, and I would love to, similar to Brittany, sort of remove that head tilt, and for us is really about redesigning what the future of education looks like and how we prepare our students for their future. And so even I'm sure if you come back in a year's time and we do this again, it's going to be completely different. And we'll have some of the core that's absolutely held true, but as our students come in and we evolve our offering to serve them, it will look different again. And I think that's a key piece, is just how quickly we are adapting for the students that we serve.
How do you gather feedback from parents and students to know what to do? I know you're a tech person, so I'm sure you have data in
Oh,
place.
there is everything from, how do students engage within the platform and how do we make things easier to kind of navigate and what have you. It is the conversations they're having with the team. We run, surveys, there are exit surveys. So there is a lot that we gather. And then looking at that paired with, again, kind of coming back to that human piece, what do our teachers know about these students? And, how does that sort of, where do they want to go? What's motivating them? What's a blocker for them? Like, we've got this information from students and parents, but from a teacher's point of view, like, what is their perspective as well? And sort of marrying all that together to influence, obviously, the teaching and learning side and, subject choice and curriculum choice, and then also the technology we build. So we're going through a huge launch at the moment in terms of we've rebuilt in-house all of our technology. Everything from our student information system through to our learning system, messaging, social interactions, community. We've rebuilt all of that, sort of taking all of this feedback, and then the way in which we've built that will naturally capture more and give students more opportunity to give more real-time feedback as well on that. So very excited that's launching for our US campus in September.
How did you land on 15 students in a classroom? I'm sure there was some thinking behind that as well.
Yes, there is. And admittedly, it's very teacher student led. So, classrooms with too few students, if one student happens to be traveling or ill, it can feel that that classroom misses so much of that dynamic. And so, when we have 15 students on our screen, it's enough students to help the room feel full and dynamic, and it makes for great learning communities and groupings. And it's also enough to where our teachers can look at their screen and know each student in that room and what they need. And so that was the balance of, it's just one of those things where as students get to certain age levels, like what makes sense for them and how do they help fill bonds? And I have some students who occasionally will be like, Mrs. Bates, there's only 10 kids in my room this year. That's... And as a parent, I'm like, wow, there's only 10 kids in your room. But they like the buzz, right? So that helps our students not feel like, oh, it's all on me, right? We don't want that anxiety. We don't want that that effective filter to get in the way of their learning. And so that 15 number helps our students feel secure in the fact that they're in a group. And our teachers balance that. How do I know my students and give them that personalized attention?
And is this school for kids with all sorts of levels of learning and maybe some learning challenges, or is it just for advanced students?
No, we're a school for ambitious, innovative students, and that looks different for everyone. We also want to deliver their just right learning. So we have, as part of our admissions process, we have benchmarking tools. We have ways to help surface where they are. And, no one tool is perfect. It's a moment in time. So there's also gathering of information so that we can get a whole picture of the student. Sometimes we want to meet with a student first to really ensure that we're placing them correctly. So, but we are a place for students to come and say, I'm ready to accelerate, or I think I just need to slow down a minute. And that's okay.
I'm curious about what surprises. I mean, you both have backgrounds in other types of schools, right? Like what has surprised you about CGA? Like what are the benefits to the students that might surprise you? What are the things that come out of international classrooms that we might be surprised about?
A couple of examples come to mind, and one, common misconception, common question I get when we talk about online is, what about the social side? And that's an almost every conversation I have when someone's new and coming in. And it's funny, you talk to our students, and I was talking to one of our head students last year about the social side, and they found that, and they just looked at me and said, that is not even something we worry about. Like, you do not need to do anything on the social side. And it's funny because I've been, was constantly thinking, okay, how can we improve this? How can we build this? And for them, this is just a natural way to connect. This person's best friend lived in another country. They were saving up to be able to spend time with each other, but they were having, if you think once upon a time, it would be kind of phone calls late at night and, someone would be trying to kind of kick you off the phone line so they could get it. But in this case, it's, they might be on Zoom, they might be on talking to each other in another way. And so they still have that connection. They form these friendships. And so that's pretty amazing to see that. The other piece is just how creative our students get. And there is that beauty in what can come out, creativity within, in a constrained environment. And the constraint being that everyone has different things around them, and how, art shows up and how media shows up and, all of those physical elements. And so you see with that as a constraint in terms of, I can only use what's around me. That's incredible what they create and then how they match that. I mean, I've seen students, do part of a piece of work in their hometown, another person do it in their hometown. They're sort of editing this together. They're creating these, beautiful stories, these art pieces, just incredible creativity. The amount of, music that's been produced from our students and music videos and how they've edited that and produced it and found students all around the world who have different instruments, different singing. I mean, that's really been incredible what they've been able to create. And yeah, see what they've just been able to go on and do. And I think that, we talked earlier about how we've been able to connect students with their specialist teachers. Some of our art students have done some incredible work, and their art teachers were online in a completely different country to them. We also, if you think about, the different perspectives that are getting brought into the classroom. You're talking about global citizenship, you're talking about humanities, you're talking about literature. All of these students in these classrooms have different perspectives and different backgrounds and different things that they bring to that. And so just the richness of that discussion, yeah, is really incredible. And so it's often this kind of misconception of like social and community and stuff. And it's like actually what they're able to build, creativity, social, community, connections, different perspectives, that well exceeds what you might be able to create in a school in which your catchment is, say, 5 miles radius. It's just a completely different perspective that gets brought in.
As you're talking, I'm also thinking, like on the social side, there's a lot of students in Cedar Park, Texas, that just communicate through their phones and Zoom with each other often. So, why not have that communication be international?
Exactly. And it's, let's say they're in Cedar Park, Texas, and they're, so passionate about astronomy. And there is nobody else at the school who cares about astronomy at all. But suddenly they're online, and it's a real life example of a club within our school is astronomy, is there is a cohort of students all around the world that are so passionate about that. And so they're connecting on their shared interests and thinking about building friendships, long-lasting communities based off a shared interest rather than a postcode. Just really, changing that perspective. So the amount of student-led clubs, I mean, I lose track of how many they are, but that's been, incredible to see the students really form those bonds around their interests.
And Brittany, you talked about student-centered. So are clubs student-centered too? Like they can raise their hand and say, I'm passionate about fashion and I want to have a fashion club.
Yes, and they can send through a proposal and they can ensure that they have others that are interested and we can help partner them with an advisor. So, yes, that is absolutely something that, I mean, schools take shape because the students take ownership. And CGA is really starting to take shape because our students have been leading the way, which isn't a surprise to me, but it is such a wonderful thing to see in a school where students, I mean, whether it's a regional meetup where I just have to remind myself or staff, get out of their way. We're here to ensure they're safe and be here in case they need an adult, but they're driving this bus, they're leading this way, and they're developing those skills. And they get to do that a lot here at CJ, more than I would think in most schools, as far as, what do they want their school to look like? What do they want their school experience to look like? They get to help decide that.
When you're talking about regional meetups, is that like a live or
Yeah.
something online?
It is. I
Okay.
see, I just opened a whole nother community for you. Yes. Yes, we hold
Do they get to meet each other three-dimensionally?
they do in real life, in real life, as they say. Yes. And I remember people being worried about it being awkward for them, or do we need icebreakers? And they always are great sports. Everyone I've been to, all the students are great sports and take part in the icebreaker. They don't need it. The adults in the room feel like they do, but our students, they'll be like, "Hey, I have you in chemistry," or, "Oh, what do you study at CGA?" And before you know it, they're off chatting, making friends, and I'm standing there with the parent, and we're just chatting because the kids haven't figured out. They know what they need and want.
Yeah. I am familiar with one online school that requires parents to be very involved and put a lot of time in. I'm curious about what you require or expect from parents and what you need from them in this environment.
I think it's important to say that we partner with families. I think require is the wrong word to put on this. We are a fully functional, supportive online school, but school's coming to where your student is. And so when you do that, it always works a little better when you partner with your school, when you are an engaged parent, when you check your parent portal, when you have these conversations with your students, right? I'd love to see you at monthly parent meeting. That being said, I'm not taking attendance. I don't require you to be there. I want to see you. I want to have that conversation. I want an email if something's not going right, just like your teachers, your students' teachers would as well. Are there parents who sign their students up for class register? Yes. And if that's what works for them and their student, absolutely. If their student is unfortunately, like I said, closing that computer and pushing off to the side, we're going to be knocking at every virtual door we can to re-engage with that parent and that student because that parent has that proximity. And so that's the partnership, right? We want to have that partnership conversation with parents about how do we empower your student? How do we ensure this works for everybody? We also hold parent-teacher conferences, and those aren't required, but we would like to see you. We want to have that conversation. We want to tell you what's fantastic about your student or talk to you about if there's a struggle or highlight a project. But again, it's a partnership, not a
Yeah.
requirement.
Well, it sounds like it can work for families that have time to put extra time into it, but it could also work for students whose families don't have a lot of time.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that's amazing. I want to circle back to AI. So I'm very curious, like right now, what is the AI policy for students and how are you using AI at CGA as educators?
I think when we say the word policy, we think restriction. And when we think about AI, we need to remember that it's technology. And when we think about technology and education, it's often shunned, whether it be a calculator, a cell phone, the personal computer, right? We put personal computers in a computer lab, calculators. I'm still, by the way, advocating students, please learn your multiplication tables. Makes life easier. But again, like we shunned as educators in education, we push technology to the side. And I don't think we do it intentionally as educators. I think we get stuck in a mindset of this is how I teach, this is how I'm sure you're learning, this is how I'm sure you're growing. And at CGA, we are proponents of now is our time to shape how we interact with technology, how we empower learners and educators to use it meaningfully. And so our policy here at CGA is let's use technology thoughtfully. Let's teach students how to be safe with it. Let's empower educators to have more of their time back to do the parts of the job they love, connecting with students and ensuring that kids get what they need. And so our policy is not one of stick it over here, it doesn't exist, you may not use it. Ours is a holistic zoom out of, hey, now's our time to shape a future for kids. Now's our time to engage in a conversation. It's not a distraction, it's a tool. How do we use it well and in a meaningful way?
And how do your teachers use it, or do you plan using it in the future?
Oh, our teachers use it in a variety of ways. We offer professional development on it. We partner with others on how to use it, and we are it's being built, it's built into our in-house technology so that again, those teachers can have some time back. There was, and I'm going to lose who wrote it, so forgive me. There's a quote that was circulating not long ago that when AI is used effectively in the classroom, it gives educators 5 hours a week back.
And they deserve that and need
Not
that.
only that, but here's what I love about educators and coming from the classroom myself. While I would love it and be supportive if that meant that teacher's going to make themselves a cup of tea and take a deep breath, I know that when we give teachers that 5 hours back, they're giving it to their students in the meaningful way that they wish they could. When I take some of the monotony out of their day or the administrative work out of their day that I can use where we can use AI, they're going to then double down on, okay, how do I serve my kids better? And that's where at CGA we use AI. That's where we really put the time in because I don't want my teacher to have busy work that's not meaningful to students or themselves. I want them to have time to do the real work that human beings should be doing in education.
Yeah, I want that for my team and for me too. So
Yeah, we all want that.
we're all trying to save time so we can do things that are more fun than, things that are monotonous that machines can do. Is there anything else that I haven't asked you about that you'd like people to know about your company and your approach?
So one other piece that comes to mind, I mean, we could have spent an entire hour talking about the AI side and what we're doing and the technology side, but important that community piece is really remembered and known for. I guess the other side of that is that CGA sits within our group of schools. So we've had this incredible success with CGA, and we've since then launched another 4 schools globally, all that serve different students in different countries. And we have, physical schools as well. But I mention that because it's, when you talked about professional development, we talk about teachers. I mean, we've been building this incredible network of educators. So now across all of our schools, we would have nearly 600 educators within our group. And so what that means from a professional development, I mean, I have 6 principals for this professional learning community that we're creating at the moment. And then we have all of these heads of departments. We have, those that are working on AI, all working with different students, but all very passionate about, the future and what this could look like instead of challenging. So it's been great to not only have this development and strength within CGA, but then also to be part of a group of sister schools all working together with that same vision that they can share and ideate and have really strong development. So that's been maybe one piece that's less obvious if you were to land on the CGA website, is really the strength and also being part of this broader network and testing different approaches and running different pilots and We have one school where really a focus has been on neurodivergent learners and learners with dyslexia. And it built this incredible curriculum. And so now we're partnering that school with CGA in terms of, great, how do we digitize this curriculum and bring that expertise in to provide more layered support? So just this incredible support network around CGA.
Brittany, anything else you want to say about your school or your educators?
I think I could spend hours talking about our school and our
I
educators.
love
I
that
think,
about you. Yeah.
honestly, just that our educators are at the heart of what we do, and they're a passionate group of human beings showing up every day trying to do what's best for kids and succeeding. And their feedback into our platforms and their willingness to really be a part of something that's continually evolving really speaks to the spirit of who they are.
If there's someone listening that's interested in applying to your school, could you just give us some like qualities you're looking for, like as te for teachers?
Yes. So Penny mentioned creativity earlier. We don't just love it in our students, we love it in our teachers. We love creative educators, fiercely passionate educators who come to the work ready to learn and evolve, who have like really believe in that neuroplasticity that they can learn something new and change. And educators who understand that they're part of a school that isn't just talking about innovation, but really jumping in front of it. So that means sometimes you're product testing with us, and that should we want that to be exciting work for them. We want their input. And so that's key.
Teachers that are excited about learning new things and growing and changing and I imagine you'd need teachers that like tech, or is that not true?
I would like to say yes to that, but some of the teachers that we work with that are just incredible, they first come and they might say, I'm not a huge tech person. But when they're online teaching, they are a tech person, but away from
Right.
school, they are. And
Yeah.
I think, and that's an okay balance.
Yeah. I've told people of all ages that I work for that you can no longer say you're not a tech person. You have to say, I'm learning about technology. It's
I think
like,
when once we get to the point of carrying mini computers in our pockets, we know none of us get to say that anymore.
my dad worked for IBM for 40 years. And when I started my career many, many years ago, he told me that every business was going to become a technology business. And at the time, I had like a secretary, we called them secretary. I had an assistant, and I had, and I was like, oh, dad, I don't need to learn about technology. Fast forward, I did apologize to him before he left the planet. He was 96 when he left. He was right. I was like, dad, you were right about that. As I'm juggling, 30 different platforms for my business. So before we leave this fascinating conversation, I'd love to hear from each of you. I'd love to give you the opportunity to give my listeners one life lesson. We'll start with life lessons, and then we'll go to leadership lessons. So, Brittany, what's your life lesson?
I lean heavy on a quote by Nelson Mandela. I never lose, I either win or learn. And that has proven true in everything I've done. I didn't discover the quote until just a few years ago. And when I read it, I went, yes, because I am a get back up, try again human. And so that quote has really been my life lesson. It's been the theme of my life lessons. I don't know, it's not always pretty, it's not always done right the first time, but I'm definitely always learning.
I love that. I've never heard that. That's amazing. I'll take that with me. Penny, how about you?
In terms of life lesson, I think there is something to be said for just doing the thing. Taking the action, taking that next step. And so often, when we look at what we've built, so many times it would be easy to be scared by that. No, others are doing it. Why have you? And you literally just have to keep moving and make those incremental. And I do actually narrow quotes that it comes to mind, which is the Atomic Habits, 1% better every day. And that sort of approach. And that's really been how we've gotten to where we are now, is there's been tiny little incremental improvements every single day that you wouldn't really notice, but someone's just committed to doing the thing each day, and that consistency, and to where we are now. So that's, yeah.
And how about a leadership lesson from each of you?
I think leadership is one of those things that teaches us every moment of every day if you're open to it. I think I'm going to lean heavy on a Brené Brown right now because I'm a huge fan of her work and her Dare to Lead, where she makes you choose. She doesn't make you, but in the book, it makes you choose two words to describe like your core values. And mine, despite my want to change them, no, I don't know why I want to change them, have always been care and courage. That's because I have found that if I am courageous enough to say the thing, and I always take care of the people I'm charged with caring for as a leader, everything else tends to work out. And that is easily like my favorite like leadership lesson that I have learned over years of leading humans, is that if we can really lean on care and be courageous enough to do the thing, we can get to the end.
It's hard not to pick a like Brené Brown quote or something there, and so like I agree and would normally kind of default to what Brittany has said, but I guess to take it in another direction so we don't sound completely the same. We've got quite a large team now, and prior to this, you've been leading quite large organizations and schools and teams before. And one thing that I find, if you kind of look on the negative side of culture, and you look at maybe toxicity or power imbalance or what have you, and you look at all of these, and time again, what you see is just this, gap of information. The people do not have context in terms of how to make decisions, how to do their roles, where the organization is going. Like you see this a lot. And so from my side on the leadership side has always been to be as like one as authentic as possible, but that authenticity comes from being as transparent as possible. As soon as I can share something, I will share it. I don't, care who is in which role or what level or anything. Everyone needs context to make decisions, to know what's okay and not okay. To build the thing in the classroom, you need to know, what else is going on. And so for me, it's always been about my leadership lesson is, I think there is something from I think it was Paddy McCord, sort of in the Netflix. It's like, in the absence of information, people make up their own. And so I've always leaned towards the like share, over communicate, and to do that in a way that is uniquely you. People get a lot of my blooper videos or random musings on things, and again, it just all builds a picture so people have that information.
Yeah, transparency creates psychological safety, right? So when you have a boss that shares things with you and doesn't wait, you feel safe, which is wonderful. What is in the future for CGA and online education? Look into your crystal ball and give me a couple of ideas for what we can expect from you and others.
Broadly, when you look at the sort of, macro trends, as online education is continuing to grow, people are really looking to that as a strong option, not an alternative, an option for them and for their family, and we will expect to see that. What will be the standard expectation, though, is this true personalization, and not personalization that is a buzzword that's been in education for forever. Every single thing that students interact with these days is largely personalized, be that everything from, and not saying this is a good thing, but from, the videos they might see online through to, or actually how they engage with any of their, if they're on Roblox or anything, the games they see, they're all very targeted to that person. The expectation that breeds is, whenever I'm doing something, the person in front of me knows about me and is making this highly personal to me. And there is that expectation that I would think education moves a lot more in that space. And any student in a classroom is getting something that is directly tailored to them. And that will become, I think, the baseline expectation and what we've been building towards, continuing to evolve. But I think that's just going to be one, online is the option and a very strong option. But then you're in this online space and just it is highly, highly personalized. Everything from the moment you log into the classes you do, how you do them, when you do them is just completely for that student and that family. And that will be the norm.
Well, I think you're already doing a lot of those things. I'm really impressed and amazed of how many options you give your students and your teachers. It's really impressive. I'm so glad we had this time together. And how do people learn more about you?
Yeah, cga.school is our website. You're welcome to connect with me on LinkedIn. Happy to chat about CGA Anytime. We also have all the socials, which we can give you for show notes. I feel like rattling those all off might just take up space.
Okay. We'll ask you for those for show notes. And thank you both very much for this time. I appreciate it. I know you're really busy, and I will circle back with more conversations to be had together.
Look forward to
Amazing.
it.
Thank
Thank
you so
you.
much, Laurel.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast. It means so much to have you here with us today. Every episode is an invitation to grow together, and we hope today's insights stay with you long after this conversation ends. Be sure to keep an eye out for our next episode. We've got more inspiring stories and practical lessons on the way. Learn more about our community of change makers at CompassionateLeaderCircle.com.